Hail Cheaters, and welcome to the Always Cheating Fantasy Podcast, brought to you this week by Untuck It. My name is Josh. I'm here with Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
I'm so good, Josh. And Untuck It, yeah, those are some great shirts. And speaking of branding, you've heard the moniker, right? Super Sunday. Mm-hmm. You've got a Sunday of great Premier League fixtures. We're recording this Sunday evening after Bournemouth, Watford, and Villa City. We are now changing the name to Capitulation Sunday, I think. Like, what? What a bunch of losers we saw on Bournemouth and Villa's part.
Those were two matches that only a fantasy manager could love. There was nothing in there for the... I mean, I guess the one-sided demolition. Man City were so good. There was something to admire there. They looked like last year's Man City. It was scary going to that. I mean, going into that match with only Kevin De Bruyne, once you saw how they lined up, I was like, you knew they were going to destroy Aston Villa.
Whatever green arrow you had going into that match was going to be softened, I guess.
Totally. And I feel like this is the year when everyone has started to think about effective ownership, right? This idea of like, you know, it sort of basically if you have a player in your team, you have 100% of that player. If you have captained a player that week, you have 200% of that player. I guess if you triple captain them, Brandon, you would have 300% of that player.
This is like the Turing test. Is that what we're doing now?
So going into that match, Kevin De Bruyne's effective ownership was at 111%. So his ownership was incredibly high, and he was captained by a ton of managers. So it was weird because I had him and I was like, anything he does is actually going to hurt me a little bit. I think, by the way, that effective ownership is like the top 10,000, I think, is what that is usually calculated by. So it does, you know, that how much that hurts you kind of probably depends on where you are in terms of overall rankings. But it's a useful idea of you know, what the ownership is among people who are taking the game, you know, really seriously. And so I knew if De Bruyne did anything, and then I knew that there were some cheeky managers out there who brought in Mahrez, who had brought in Aguero, captained Aguero. And I have to admit, I didn't even really consider it. I mean, it wouldn't have been easy for me to do anyway, given the way my team is set up. But there was no scenario in which I was even considering bringing in an extra Man City player this weekend. Were you? Was there any, like, did you think about it at all?
Certainly not. Absolutely not. And you know, you could chalk it up to one of those flaws in planning for a double game week well in advance. Like the Liverpool double blinds you to these moves. Like, oh, City players could be interesting for the Villa fixture, but they're so expensive. I will say, on the other hand, I have been waiting for this match to happen since, you know, game week 5, 6, 7, 8, when I was heavily invested in Manchester City players.
And it
did not come. So we can talk about this Villa City match, but hindsight is what it is now. And we have a whole section coming up in the podcast dedicated to talking about Manchester City's form and the beating that they gave Manchester United in their cup match midweek. So I don't know if the scales might be tipping a little bit in their favor.
Yeah, I mean, and Brendan, even then, by the way, if you had done that, you would have like Captain Sterling and Vice Captain Jimenez, like, to be safe. You know, somehow it still wouldn't have worked out, you know, even with all that planning. But you hit on something that I do want to talk about just for a moment, which is this like the 10,000th consecutive time that planning for a double game week has blinded us to what's right in front of us, that we are so excited about the possibility of two matches in one game week that we ignore all the other opportunities to accrue points in the kind of, you know, regular normal game weeks. As I said before, there was really no chance of me bringing in a Man City player this week, but I felt, you know, once they started to kind of annihilate, like once it was 3-0, like 20 minutes in, I felt like a little chastened because I was like, well, I should have at least thought about it. You know, it was like it didn't even enter my thinking at all. And I was sort of like, I was kind of like, I don't know, just interrogating the way that I was thinking about this stuff, because I've been very focused on Game Week 24 as well when Liverpool have, you know, the two matches. And I thought, you know, I need to make sure that I am sort of thinking about everything, you know, in terms of my own team, in terms of what we talk about on this podcast. Actually, the theme of this week's podcast is, you know, who are we overlooking? And that's what we're going to talk about in a few minutes. But do you know what I'm saying? Like, it can be a, you know, these kind of, sometimes it's not even a double game week. It's just like a really big fixture on the horizon. And everyone starts thinking about it and planning for it. And, and you end up missing out on these big opportunities. And obviously that was that, you know, one of those was today. I mean, if you captain Aguero, that's 40 points right there, right? That's, you know, you could jump 500,000 spots if you, you know, depending on where you are in, you know, overall rank.
Yeah, I do agree with you. And I think it's, you could say you're blind to the other opportunities because you're focused on a double game week plan. I think just more academically, we said this a week ago. Okay, so counting forward to game week 24 with the Liverpool double, you have exactly three transfers to play.
Right.
Assuming you didn't roll two the previous week.
Right.
So every single one of those transfers sort of leads you into whatever your game week 24 plan is, because you're going to need that many transfers.
Right.
So it's not like you're sitting here saying, well, I didn't realize that City were playing Villa. You knew, but it was a calculated risk. And if you go back and you look at City's recent form, it didn't point to a 6-1 absolute hammering of Villa. You've got 2-1 versus Everton and a 2-0 chastened win against Sheffield United before they were kind of humiliated against Wolverhampton. And right. we had lots of questions about their form leading up to that point. So I don't know how much hindsight is playing into this specific case. That said, I have to agree with you, and I think that still is a narrative that we constantly lose sight of when double game weeks come into it, is that there's only one or two different ways we feel we can play a double game week.
Right.
And then we choose our path and then the rest is history.
Yeah. And I think that you are right, by the way. Hindsight, with hindsight, I would have burned four in Captain Aguero. But I mean, going into this game week, I know Aguero and Jesus were both rested at midweek, but it would not. Would you have like been at all shocked if Aguero just didn't start this game week? Like if he just been on the bench to start things off? I would have been mildly surprised at best. Right? It would not have stunned me.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was the total wild card with the Manchester Derby midweek, in that neither Jesus or Aguero started. So there were no clues as to what was going to happen in game week 22. So it was to even try and play it, it was a wild guess, because Jesus, maybe you felt like he was favored by Pep at the moment. Aguero, perhaps the slightly better player. There are just so many factors at play.
So we've officially let ourselves and everyone who's listening who didn't bring in these players off the hook. We can move on and we can talk about our, you know, we'll talk about Man City a lot more in the main section in a few minutes. But our own teams, Brandon, you had a pretty good game week, all things considered, right? I mean, you know, probably looked a little better before the demolition today, but you finished on, was it 63 points all told?
Yeah, exactly. 63 points. One of those game weeks where it does feel like City versus Aston Villa, where it's an absolute annihilation on the first half, which would be Saturday.
Yeah.
And then, you know, things start to quiet down a little bit in the second half on Sunday.
Yeah.
But Marcus Rashford, who I feel like I've been trying to maximize that transfer that I made with him maybe 6 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And the brace, the brace against Norwich really, I think, was the best of Rashford. And now the question will be, how much longer do I hang on to him? But the 12 from him really did launch me into a good spot in game week 22 to get me to that 63 points. Finally get a week in which Mohamed Salah beats Sadio Mane for points. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess he technically did last week just based on bonus points. But so it's 3 points better than Mane as opposed to just 2 points better than Mane. Anyway, that felt good. The captaincy, you know, we can talk about that a bit more, but Vardy getting the assist, ultimately, I mean, the other player that I probably ultimately would have gone with was Kevin De Bruyne. So
yeah,
it's
same.
A 4-point turnaround there. So it's not,
whatever.
Not really much that, exactly. Not too aggrieved.
Yep.
The Madison set piece at the end that was ultimately slotted in by Johnny Evans. I think you can see, I don't know if Johnny Evans was not celebrating that goal because he knew he was offside, or he was just terrified of what VAR was to bring. Anyway.
I think so. It wasn't like he used to play for Southampton or something, and he was like,
I did definitely go quickly by. I did a drive-by of Johnny Evans' Wikipedia page. Like, did he play for Southampton? What's going on here?
Right, right.
So I guess he knew that he was offside. But to get an assist from Madison, I think really would have been the cherry on top of the game week. But yeah. Just real quick on the back line, some heroes back there. Lundstrom, of course, Alexander-Arnold, both with clean sheets. Sidibe, who was, me taking a flyer on this new Ancelotti Everton. Him with the clean sheet. That's good enough to keep him in my good graces. So I feel like he came through. So yeah, a small green arrow. I'm feeling a little bit of momentum shifting here. Positive. I love football, Josh. That's all I had to say about that.
It does football, seem like
if you're listening, I love you.
It does seem like you've been on a nice run here. I you're too comp. Okay. Yeah. So it looks like you've got, three green arrows in your last four. It looks like you're up almost 500,000 places since game week 18. So pretty solid, I think.
Definitely. It's like a week like this, too. It's a weird one where I think most managers listening, you will be in the 50 to 60 range, which is where the average is. And then there are some managers who, like we were saying, were in on Manchester City and had great leaps, upwards of 80, 90. Some people almost cresting 100 points this week, and you start to get a little I don't know if it's FOMO or jealousy or what, like people seeing 250k rank jumps, and you kind of want to be there with them, but my 30k rank jump this week, as you're saying, just taking it as part of a whole over the last 6 months or six weeks or so, I have to feel good about it.
Yeah, I think that would make sense. I would feel the same, I think. So
how about you?
Yeah, not as, I mean, it was like a whatever. Like I think we talked before about like there are bad game weeks and there are devastating game weeks, and this was just like a board, like it was just a bad one, It was like a whatever. I finished on 54 points, a little below average. I think my game week rank is like 4 million overall. But it actually didn't really hurt me that much because my team is pretty template for kind of the top 100k or so. So I only slid from, I think, from 31,000 overall to 42,000. So only falling 11,000 spots with a below average game week doesn't feel too bad. And I held onto my transfer. And so I've got two going into the next game week. And it kind of the same players as you. I just didn't have as many good players. I think all the players who contributed for me did for you as well. Danny Ings, that classic moment when you're thrilled the player scores. And then he struggled to take his shirt off. And I was like, just give up, just give up on trying to take it off, man. Just like accept that it's too sweaty. It's not going to come off. Just keep it on. Cause the second the shirt comes off, it just like, it takes all the joy of the goal from your player being scored. It's like, it just undercuts it, doesn't it?
Does.
Yeah. But, so he finished on, and then he missed a huge chance a couple minutes later. So if he finished on five, but, we'll be talking more about Danny Ings in a few minutes. So I will table that part of it. But just before we move on from this, game week 24 is, we don't really, we're actually not going to cover it too extensively on this podcast. So just at the top of the pod right now, Brandon, where are you with game week 24? What is your current plan? Are you still planning on bringing in Sadio Mane so you'd have Mane, Salah, and Trent going into game week 24?
Yeah. So my plans changed a little bit just based on the form of Danny Ings that can't be denied. So I was thinking of doing a little bit of work on my defensive back line in game week 23 just to get ready for my double transfer. So I, like you, I rolled my free transfer. So I have two frees right now.
So that was a given. We all know that you roll your.
Yeah, always Brandon two frees. Old Brandon two frees. So I was thinking, maybe I'll bring in old Brandon Williams to replace Diego Rico, who is absolute dead weight in my team right now.
Yeah.
And then I will do my double switch with Rashford and Madison out for Greenwood and Sadio Mane.
Okay.
What I'm thinking now is doing a little sort of a Danny Ings gambit in game week 23. So I'll use one of my two frees going into 23 to turn Rashford into Ings and play him. And then Ings comes out heading into 24 for the previously mentioned plan. So it would be Ings and Madison out instead of Rashford and Madison out.
This feels very dangerous to me. The problem with this 1 week move is, what happens if he does anything? Like, if he gets a brace in game week 23, are you going to drop him again?
Well, like, I'm talking about dropping Marcus Rashford, who just braced. So
that's true. You're just dropping braces everywhere. Yeah.
I mean, I do have Jimenez. Jimenez is the other, discussion point up front. I think Vardy is immovable, even though I think we have some interesting questions about Leicester coming up later on the pod.
Yeah.
But it could be Jimenez out. I just have so many questions about what's going on at Wolverhampton right now. Like, are they good? Are they lukewarm?
Yeah.
Is it just a bit of a dry spell for them attacking wise? I'm unsure.
Yeah.
So yeah, is it a risk? The risk, I think, that you would agree with me is less, playing hokey cokey with the likes of Rashford and Ings. The bigger risk is bringing so much money into my midfield and sort of just disrupting. The bigger risk is ultimately ending up with somebody like Greenwood in the front three and throwing off the balance of my budget around my team. That's what's really concerning to me.
Yeah, this is why I have ultimately decided I'm just going to go without Salah. That's at least where I'm leaning. The concern with not going with Salah, I have Mane and Trent Alexander-Arnold, and a lot of people will have Salah. I wonder now if people are a little too worried about him to triple captain him. I guess the concern would be if I didn't have Salah and he was heavily owned and heavily triple captained going into game week 24, then there could be a lot of risk there. You know, like if he did anything, it could really hurt you, and so you're really not playing any defense if you don't have him in your team. But the problem is, I kind of have the same issue as you, is that there's the way that I have to do it is I have to bring in like Brandon Williams and Mason Greenwood or Gabriel Martinelli or something like that. And then I've got these 4.4 million and 4.5 million players that I don't trust at all, that basically as soon as game week 24 is over, I have to figure out how to drop them, and bring in somebody else. And that's just, that doesn't feel like good team management to me. And so I think I'm just going to try to survive game week 24 without Mo Salah. My plan right now is to, I actually don't have to free up too much money to do this, but my plan is to drop two defenders, Aurier and Fredericks, and use the money from that to move Jimenez to Firmino. So then I would have Firmino, Mane, and Trent. And the hope would just be that Firmino can roughly give me what you would get out of Mo Salah, which I don't think is an unreasonable thing to expect. Firmino's actually been in pretty good form, too. I think he's got 3 goals in his last four. Three in his last three matches, something like that. So I think that's, and then I don't really, then I get to keep Ings, I get to keep Vardy, I get to keep Martial, who's got a good game week 24 match. I get to keep Grealish, who also has a good game week 24 fixture. I just don't really disrupt anything, and I still have a team that I think is pretty well set up for game week 24. So that's where I am. And it just, that makes the most sense for me. And you just have to live with the risk of not having Mo Salah or Sadio Mane, as the case may be for certain people.
The only other plan that could exist is to, so we're both talking about doubling up on attack, whether it's midfield or forward. Liverpool are now 6 clean sheets on the bounce in the Premier League.
Yeah.
Do you find that at all to be a compelling case to say, what, I'm going for the defensive double up with Robertson and Alexander Arnold?
Yeah. I think that's another way to do it. I don't know why I'm so reluctant to go that route. Maybe it's because both matches are away in 24. I guess that must be all it is. I don't really want to do it in 23 when they're home to Man United. So maybe it's like a little too short-sighted, because I agree. I mean, if you look ahead to game weeks 24 through, 31, it looks, really appealing for defensive fixtures. But I guess, that applies to defense or attack, right? I mean, do you want two defenders when you're at West Ham, or do you want two attackers? I mean, it's kind of like a coin flip, right? I mean, in terms of what would do better.
Yeah.
And so it's just whether you, and for me to bring in Robertson, I would have to drop one of Ings or or Jimenez to make that happen. And I just don't really like anyone below those players in that price range. You know, like you saw with Delafeu today, he's just too streaky. I just don't trust him, you know? So,
he was a weird performance from him today for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And you wonder if the ceiling is just so much higher with Liverpool's attack right now than their fullbacks, which I don't know. It depends on any given day. So.
It depends, Brandon. It's the answer to every question that we get on this podcast. All right. This has been a very substantive introduction, much more substantive than we normally are. Let's quickly, Brandon, run through the always cheating Super League. Do you want to read off the top 10?
Yeah, of course. And it looks like we have a tie in 10th place, both with 1383 total points. It's Predrag Djuric, and I have to make this a little larger. My eyes, they're getting weak in my old age, Josh. We've got Mauro Zirachi. This is going to be a tough one this week. I'm already feeling it, Josh. In ninth place, Scott Thompson. In eighth, it's David Burns. Seventh, Neil Thompson. Man, these are getting easier. Brian Lister in sixth. Kieran Screeton in fifth. Fourth place, James McKay. And in third, Tu Lumbi. And in second place, Declan Ryan. And holding it down in first place, it's Christopher Bergman with 1402. Just 1 point above Declan Ryan in second place. Well done to everyone in the Always Cheating Super League, the greatest FPL mini league in the world. And let's take a moment, too, to thank all of our lovely Patreon supporters. We've got some new members this week at the Lord Sorloth tier. Josh, who are those new Patreon supporters?
Yes, we do. Thank you, as Brandon said, to all the people who support the podcast on Patreon. You go to patreon.com/alwayscheating to support the podcast and get an extra bonus podcast each week. I did this week's podcast, and you'll be doing the upcoming weeks, week, I should say. You also get access to our lively Slack channel, including the Ask Josh and Brandon channel, which is always a very popular channel on the Slack. So thank you to our new patrons, Hans Buller. These are all Lord Sorloth patrons, by the way, Brandon. Hans Buller, Artu Jokinen, Arlen Guarin, and Michael St. Clair. Once again, go to patreon.com/alwayscheating to support the pod, and we will thank our producers at the end of the podcast.
Excellent. Josh, let's take a quick break, and we're going to come back and talk about who are we overlooking this season. I think there are a few names here that we can talk about.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Brian, we're back. Today's theme, who are we overlooking? We already discussed some of them on this podcast. I'm going to start things off, though, with a question, a broad question, Brandon. Broad question from Final Richie. He says, I'm on a wild card here. Can you give me a couple of high-risk, high-reward players to go for to help me climb the ranks? So I like this high-risk, high-reward. Okay, so that we're going to focus exclusively on players that are high-risk and high-reward. Okay, no blue chips here, Brandon. Okay. These are all – this is where we're in pure, reckless hedge fund, like, got to spend this money. It's like all ill-gotten gains. Got to, you know, invest it back in the market as quick as possible. So who are a couple high-risk –
The question is Riyad Mahrez too big to fail? That's what we all want to know, Josh.
Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, so Mahrez certainly falls into this category. I have completely overlooked Mahrez. What do you think about Riyad Mahrez?
Well, I think we made our Mahrez stance pretty clear last week, and we were talking about how, you know, this has been the defining feature of Raheem Sterling's season, and the defining feature, I think, of City is rotation has been kind of out of control. As far as we talked about the concerns over Aguero and Jesus, and the same has been true of Mahrez. Now, Mahrez has put together some really decent streaks earlier this season and even last season, and it seems really hard for him to ultimately reap the reward from multiple starts, multiple matches in which he is returning. But that it's another question mark over this Villa Manchester City match, in that, wow, is City really back? Wow, is Mahrez really a lock for that starting lineup? And is he a lock for an FPL returner? Because, you know, based on the last 3 weeks, I think maybe we do have to change our stance a little bit, and that we have overlooked him.
Yeah, it's, you know, I just don't really like to bring in anybody who doesn't have like consistency of starts. And I mean, I'm just looking back and he started the last three before that. And I guess I'm talking purely about the Premier League here. I mean, I didn't pull the stats for every random match they played in, but, you know, played 45 minutes in game week 19, 20 minutes in game week 17, 25 and 16, 18 and 15. 68 and 40. I mean, it's just like he's not a, you know, I think he started, you know, 11 out of 22 matches so far this season. And so, you know, David Silva is back. Bernardo Silva is back. He just, you know, he's 8.4 million. He's not exactly cheap. And I just don't, you know, 8.4 million just feels like a lot to spend on a player when you don't honestly know if they're going to start any match. And, you know, you look at someone like James Maddison and you just think, okay, like, maybe he's not quite as explosive as Riyad Mahrez, but you know he's going to start every match. You know he's going to be in every set piece. And maybe, you know, I don't think of myself as an extremely conservative manager, but to me that just – and he's 0.7 million cheaper. And that just – you know, someone like him just is so much more appealing to me than someone like Riyad Mahrez.
Yeah, I certainly won't be making the move for Mahrez. And I do feel like I'm in a position here where I do want a high risk, high reward player.
Yeah,
it's all coming back to the game week 24 double on that. I'm like viewing that as the current like high risk, high reward gambit that I'm playing. I'll tackle these other players once I do play my wild card. After that, but yeah, so Mahrez maybe a little too high risk in terms of the reward that you would get in return. Then you look to Everton, another player you have mentioned here, Josh, is Richarlison. So Dominic Calvert-Lewin has been returning most consistently for Everton, and Everton are looking much better over the last month. Then there is Richarlison, who was the one that actually returned over the one-pointer from DCL.
Mm-hmm.
I would you consider Richarlison over Dominic Calvert-Lewin at this point? I mean, DCL is still seems like he's a lock in that striker spot, assuming Everton doesn't sign anyone, which I can't imagine, given all the money they've already spent this season, that they would.
Yeah.
So I think DCL is still probably the better pick.
Yeah,
over,
I mean,
Richarlison, you know?
I guess if we're just comparing the two, then I think Richarlison is just, he wins the, like, who's the better player argument. You know, like, this is, it reminds me of we were, you know, like 5 weeks ago, whatever it was, before I brought in Danny Ings, there was, the stats were sort of pointing to Neil Maupay as the, I was looking for someone in that kind of 6 million range, and it was between Ings and Maupay. This is like, it was Boxing Day. This is when I was debating this. And even though the stats were all pointing towards Maupay, I went with Ings because I just thought, well, Ings is a better player. I just know, you know, it's like he's, I just trust him more as a player. And of course, it seems very obvious now that he scored 3 matches in a row and looked, you know, incredible away to Leicester. But, you know, I mean, like Richarlison, I just feel like I trust a little bit more. I mean, he did score 13 goals last season. You know, he's still super young. He feels like he's the most important attacker in that squad. And so obviously he does cost more than, you know, one's a midfielder, one's a forward. It's not like a total like for like situation, but if I could have anybody on Everton, I would certainly go with Richarlison over Calvert-Lewin. And I just don't trust Calvert-Lewin, I guess, is really what it comes down to. I mean, he does 8 goals in the season, which is impressive, but do you trust him? Like, would you recommend someone get him? I just don't trust him.
There's a stat that I roll out every time DCL comes up, and it was, I think it was 2 seasons ago. He led the league. I don't know if it was at the end of the season or it was at some point during the league. He led in most aerial duels won. And if I trust DCL at anything, it is his play in the air. He is just dominant. And it's interesting to look at. His frame looks a little slight. For what you'd expect from a stat like that. But
yeah,
I like him. And if you want to further split hairs, Richarlison, he's on 13% ownership, whereas Calvert-Lewin is 6.9% ownership. And yeah, I think that is kind of splitting hairs here. And I
pretty
think
low in either case.
I think you're Yeah, it is low in either case. And, you know, your point stands in terms of, you know, just go for the better player. If you're looking for future returns, the better player is probably going to set you up in that way.
Yeah, if you're on a wild card. Yeah.
Exactly. But I think if you are really looking to make those higher risk picks, you want to look at percentage of teams who have selected these players, which brings me to Heung-Min Son, who I think is got to be top of this list of high risk, high reward players to consider, because this is one of the best attacking players in the league for the past few seasons. And he is now just on 6.6% ownership, which is obscenely low for who is now Spurs' best attacker with Harry Kane out. And even then you could have your own argument there. 9.8, it's a little expensive, particularly if we're looking at a season in which KDB is essential, in which having a Liverpool midfielder is essential. But I think if you're looking to turn a corner this season, Son has to be top of the list.
Yeah, I think Son is up there. If I were to throw out one more, I would say maybe Lacazette, just to be like a little different, you know. Aubameyang's going to be out for the next 3 weeks. Lacazette is almost certainly going to be leading the line over the next 3 weeks and will be counted on to be even more of a goal scorer than, he kind of does anyway, you know, even when Aubameyang plays. But I do think that he'll end up having more chances. I suppose he won't be on pens. I guess Pepe would probably take pens now. So I guess it just sort of depends on, we don't really know under Arteta, right? I mean, Pepe and Lacazette are both good penalty takers, so it's hard to say. But if you wanted to be a little bit different, I mean, you've, Brandon, talked about how much you like the idea of having Lacazette, and now's your chance, man, you know?
Yeah, right. The big concern with Lacazette is how much of the FPL treasure does he share with Aubameyang, or does he get any of it? But now, you've got a three-week window in which you're kind of assured Lacazette is going to have all of the big chances. I think that's a really interesting pick.
I was surprised that Aubameyang even got a yell, like that it wasn't a straight red just from like the initial kick. You know, like it doesn't feel like you need a V. Like that was, I don't know, maybe it was like, it just looks so bad on video review, right? Like when you saw that, you're like, wow, that is.
Wow. Are you saying that you're a fan of VAR now?
No, I'm not saying that, Brandon, but I'm just saying this is, listen, there, it's not like it's always wrong, you know, but I think, don't even put me in this position, because I had a full scale meltdown on Friday night after the end of the Sheffield United match. I can't even do the VAR thing this time. So let's move on to a couple of other people, players, et cetera, that we're overlooking. Danny Ings, we've talked about already. I got a couple questions here. The Wrangler says, is it too late to join the Ings party? FPL SWAT says, is Danny Ings now a genuine armband contender versus Wolves next weekend? Danny Ings, one of the greatest single one goal performances. He scored one goal. He probably could have had three or four in that match. It was incredible.
Wait, before you said three, I thought you were going to say 30, because I would put his XG upwards of 30 in that match. It was incredible. He was a man so possessed, good. And he I was. Think that is exactly why he tore his shirt off when he finally scored that match, because it was just sort of a, look at me, look what I did, look what I am doing. And I think I'm not an Ings owner right now, but just seeing that madman with his insane tattoos, it was basically a come get me
to all fantasy managers
message to all fantasy managers. And if you were bummed that he missed out on bonus points and he dropped a yellow card point because of that, you should at least take heart that what him taking that shirt off meant was that this is not the end. This is not the end by a long shot.
Yeah, I was surprised I wasn't more bummed. I guess I did. I just wasn't. I really had no expectations going into that match. You know, I mean, I thought he could do something, and I you know, but just because his form is so good. But it wasn't like I captained him or whatever. So even just getting five, I was like, okay, fine, sure. This is still an attacking return. It's still better than nothing. But yeah, I mean, they really have probably their best. the best run of the season starts in game week 23. I mean, they have one bad match, basically. They're away to Liverpool in game week 25. And even that could be an interesting match for him because it is a return to Liverpool. You know, so maybe a little extra juice for that one like he was for the Leicester match. Wolves, Palace, Liverpool. And then it's Burnley, Aston Villa, and Newcastle at home in 3 out of 4. And then away to West Ham and away to Norwich. So, I mean, there probably are some captainable fixtures in there for him. Game week 23, I think I'm really fixed on De Bruyne right now. At home to Crystal Palace as my game week 23 captain. But I think Ings is a reasonable captain pick at home to Wolves. I mean, Wolves defense is pretty poor and he's in great form. I don't know. There are worse captain picks for 23. That's for sure.
Yeah. Game week 23. I guess we have to talk a little bit about the captaincy more at the end of the pod. It's like we were spoiled for choice. I could have talked myself into any captain going into 22.
Yeah.
23, it looks like I'm able to sort of talk myself out of any captaincy options. So, I think we need to brainstorm a little bit at the end of the pod.
Yeah, we'll talk more about there are some midweek matches, too, which could affect things.
All right. So, Ings, specifically to Wrangler, it's not too late. I think the party is just in full swing right now. It's just is this guy going to win the Golden Boot? It is conceivable. Can we quickly talk about Jamie Vardy and what's going on at Leicester? I mean, Leicester looked really rattled. I don't know if by Southampton. I don't know if Southampton are just in that good a form right now, or if Leicester themselves are wiped out from that really tough run of fixtures that they had over the holidays. But where are you at with the likes of Soyuncu and Vardy?
I think there are a couple factors. I do think that Leicester came out looking to win that match. I mean, I don't know. There's no reason why. We're all human, right? I mean, if someone came into your house and annihilated you 9-0, as Leicester did, at St. Mary's Stadium, whatever that was, the last fall.
This isn't a home invasion situation.
They destroyed them. It was one of the more embarrassing losses, right? I mean, they were pouring in 2, 3, 4 goals like after the 80th minute in that match. So of course, I mean, how could they not be extra motivated for that match? And I think it really showed. I mean, they were in the front for the entire match. It's a little concerning because if you do combine it with Aston Villa, who also played pretty well at Leicester City in midweek in the Carabao Cup semifinal, the first leg of that. It's, with Ndidi out now too, there's concerns about the Leicester defense. I thought Vardy played really well at least he played well in the second half of the Carabao Cup match and, had a great assist in the first half of the match. Just didn't create a lot of chances in the second half or later. I don't really see it as a big issue still. The fixtures are still pretty good for Leicester. I'm not planning to move him anytime soon. I guess he has shifted from unmovable to could move him, right? Like given a further loss of form. So I guess that has changed a little bit. Like he doesn't feel like a season lock the way he did a couple of weeks ago. Yeah. And so I guess that is a big change. But I mean, that assist he had was so good in the first half. And
it was great.
Almost scored a really nice goal in the Carabao Cup near the end of that match. Had a really nice pass to Iheanacho for an assist in that match too. So it's not like this guy is just completely gone in terms of his form. But again, I mean, he has, and it is now whatever it is, 4 matches for them where he hasn't scored. I mean, he hasn't played in 2 of those, but still it's something to think about.
Well, going back to the Ings thing, if we're overlooking anyone, it's surely Che Adams, who got his first goal involvement of the entire season with that assist to Danny Ings. Hilarious, hilarious stuff from Che Adams. Just what a wonderful guy. All right, so we talked a bit about Mahrez with Final Richie's question, but we need to talk a little bit more about Manchester City. We have a question here from FPL Wire who asks, City's form not just today, but in battering United midweek, tempting an early wild card, especially if not already in the top 100K. So FPL Wire here is looking to leverage City's newfound form in into sort of launching his overall rank.
Well, he specifically asked, I edited this question, Brandon, because he specifically said, Brandon, are you thinking about doing this? Now, I didn't want to put you on the spot too much, but the question was, is it something you've, as you make your push towards the top 100K, is that something that you, would you think about an early wild card to bring in Man City players to kind of get ahead of the pack a little bit?
Yeah, I suppose I would. I mean, the game I was playing that I think got me into this mess that we've discussed a few times, Josh, is earlier in the season, I went all in on City at the expense of not having any Liverpool players. So I would like to endorse this idea of early wild card and loading up on a bit of Manchester City.
Right.
But it just can't just be at the expense of.
Yeah.
But well, I had, but I think there's a different way to do it. And you have to take a more balanced approach. While you're trying to explode up the ranks from a lower position, maybe around 1 million or around 500K, you're not going to do it all just on the back of differentials. You will need the support of sort of locked in, widely owned assets. I mean, not all of, obviously you can't have them all, but if I were to do that, I would at least still want to have a Liverpool midfielder. I would still want to have somebody like Jamie Vardy up front. Do you know what I mean?
Like I do.
Sort of balanced way of using this as a weapon.
Well, I guess this leads right into FPL Chancellor's question, because it says, is there an argument to stack up on their attackers and accept the odd benching? We are in a situation right now where, especially with Todd Cantwell, you actually have a bench attacker who's pretty decent, right? Who can get you attacking returns, with a semi-regular basis. So does that maybe make it a little easier to bring in a Riyad Mahrez type, because you know that it's not just going to be some 4.5 million dud in there, that you have some players who could actually come in and deliver points for you?
Well, Todd Cantwell is home Bournemouth in game week 23. Everyone's just going to have to start him. So Central is that odd. He is that odd fifth midfielder where he's become a bench headache. So I think that's a very fair assessment, where he's freeing you up to take on a little bit more of that City rotation risk. I agree.
Yeah. I know. I'm actually starting Cantwell over Grealish right now on my bus team for game week 23. And I still feel weird about it. Maybe just because, like, just 2 weeks ago, I did that. I started Cantwell over Grealish, and that was when Grealish had a goal and an assist away to Burnley. So it's, but how can you not start Cantwell? I think Cantwell has 3 double digit returns at home already on the season. I think that's right. Newcastle, Wolverhampton, Crystal Palace, and he also had 10 away to Everton. He has 4 double digit returns in the season, and 3 of them have come at home. So I think you do have to start Cantwell in that match.
So I wonder if Cantwell is gonna be a Michu light as far as FPL memories are concerned. Like, this is not a Michu at Swansea-esque season for Cantwell, but the reason I'm making the comparison is, will we ever hear from Todd Cantwell again after this season? I don't know.
Sometimes they turn into Robert Snodgrass, and sometimes they turn into George Boyd. It's like, you just never know. Yeah. You never know what you're going to get.
Well, Cantwell is a bit more George Boyd-ish given his use of the headband. So
yeah, but
that's a warning sign. Todd.
He's like 18 years old. I mean, Brandon, I'm not saying he's going to turn into this player, but I mean, you and I have both been playing long enough that there was a season when Liverpool had a 17-year-old midfielder who was just 4.5 million named Raheem Sterling, who was slowly working his way into everybody's fantasy team near the end of that season. So Harry Kane, his breakout season, he started off at 5 million. So we don't know. I mean, I don't think Cantwell is like a 20 goal, 20 assist guy or whatever, but I think he's talented. I mean, I've certainly watched him play enough now that I feel like he's better than
Agreed.
Me. And that's, I don't say that easily. So. All right. So I guess we've talked about City a lot, right? I mean, we're kind of on the same page. I agree with you. Aguero and Jesus, now it feels like even more confusing, because are they both going to keep starting? Does this last for a while? I still don't
we
know
have
what
two,
to do.
It's like we either have not enough data or too much data. We never have just the right amount of data when it comes to Jesus versus Aguero.
Yeah, and I still don't trust Ramirez, even despite what we did today. Someone asked a question. I actually didn't add it here, but I think it's worth thinking about. I did add it, Brennan, because it was a good question. Jeff Waugh says, wasn't this 6-1 away win for City basically like the 8-0 home win versus Watford? But that, I mean, do we risk overhyping Man City players when, in fact, they just caught a bad team on a really bad day? I think there's some food for thought there.
I think I'm more in the Jeff Waugh camp in terms of my assessment. It's like this coupled with the midweek cup match against Manchester United was also a dominant performance that, you know, kind of makes you pause and scrutinize the film.
Yeah.
But I think if you don't just want to take last week's points and try and paste them onto next week's game week expectations. What we know of Man City, we have to take the totality of the season. And I think the totality of the season would show us that Man City are more flaky than this. Yeah. So I'm feeling like I need to see a little bit more before I am playing that Man City wild card.
It's so funny. It's sometimes like the game, this fantasy game, Brandon, it can be so hard to play the right way. I mean, like, I just thinking about Aston Villa, right? It's like they went into Burnley. They picked up a really nice win there. They go away to Leicester. They pick up a draw, you know, could have been a win if not for a late equalizer from Leicester. It looks like they've recaptured some of their form, you know? And so who could have, I mean, I guess they did lose Tom Heaton, and I guess that obviously is significant, but you know, who could have predicted that they would just get destroyed? I mean, they haven't been quite good at home against a few teams this season. So it was a little, you know, I don't know. It does feel slightly fluky to me as well. I mean, you know, and again, like it's like with Watford that, you know, Watford are now like, you can't score on them, you know, and they lost 8-0 to Man City, you know, 10 game weeks ago. So, I think sometimes there's something said for just catching a team on a bad day, distracted day. Maybe Aston Villa just kind of, you know, they knew what was up going into this one, you know, and they just didn't quite have the fire, you know. Yeah.
And you have to assume Villa were probably playing a system that was a little strange or less familiar to them, given that Wesley is out and it was kind of a strikerless formation. I think Grealish and El Ghazi were kind of sharing responsibilities in some sort of a 5-3-1-1 or something like that.
Yeah.
I think that could play into it as well, where they were just a little shaky in terms of where every player needed to be on the pitch. And it was pretty easy then for City to just work around them the way that they were really skillful at doing.
Yeah. And credit to Grealish, who was like just fuming the entire match. I mean, he really did try hard. I don't know how productive he really was for Aston Villa, but he played with a lot of fire. So credit to him. I think even if Aston Villa go down, I think he ends up staying in the Premier League. You know, some other club will
take a chance on him. He's not Tom Kearney. He's proved that much this season.
No Boyd or Kearney. I agree. Or Knockhart for that matter. All right. One last team before we move on here. Watford. I did mention them just a moment ago. Chico Fernandez says, does the fact that Decore is playing advanced in an inspired Watford squad mean I have to get him in for the third year in a row? The answer is yes. And Bryn Stewart said, is Sarr in Watford for real? So Decore first. You have never had Decore, right? Ever once?
I have never once had Decore, though I have long been an admirer of Decore. I think I just love his the way he plays is like he's bursting through a brick wall at all times. Mm-hmm. He's just
like Jordan Ayew bursting through a net.
Yeah, imagine what Jordan Ayew does in that. That's what Decore does to brick walls many times during a match. There's a great power. I think that power that Decore has sometimes comes at the expense of grace. Mm. You know, not the most graceful, but 5.6. Mm-hmm. If I have to stack Decore up against Sarr, who apparently we also have to talk about, we have a question from Bryn Stewart who asks, is Sarr for real? I mean, I do think Decore is more like a full package of a footballer than Sarr is. Sarr's playing, I think, more reliably farther forward, and he's got, what, 3 attacking returns in a row now. It's a weird place to be with Watford that we're actually talking about this, Josh. I don't know if I've processed my thoughts. What do you think?
Well, I think that, I mean, Sarr is, I suppose, the more highly rated attacking player, right? I mean, Decore is a little more box to box, at least traditionally he has been. Sarr can't really finish, you know, which does hurt him a little bit. I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm kind of with you on Decore. I too have never had him in my team. I've long admired. I'm like a director who really wants to work with an actor, and I've just never quite found the right project. You know, that's
call
how I feel about
Decore.
Decore. So one day he and I will work together, but it has not happened yet. But I
you just don't have the right part for him just yet.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, you know. Okay, so if I were to bring in Mo Salah, if I just broke down and decided that I just needed to have him, or I don't know, like Firmino gets injured at midweek, or you know, who knows? Any number of reasons this could happen. I would probably have to downgrade Jack Grealish to make it happen. And the 6.3 million Jack Grealish to Decore at 5.6 million would probably make sense as a move. I mean, the other players I would consider in that bracket would be someone like Trossard at Brighton. And I think I would just go for Watford given their superior form right now. So yeah, I guess I would go for Decore over Sarr. Him playing an advanced role is something that I can't really speak to because I just don't track Watford closely enough. So if you do, let us know on with Twitter or the Slack or whatever, let us know in an email and we'll talk about it next week's podcast. But I guess between the two, I would just go with Decore's superior track record and the fact that he's 0.6 million cheaper, and I'd opt for him instead.
Fun fact that Decore and Sarr both have 1.2% ownership, which wow, what a coincidence. Low ownership team, Watford. So I think this is a good team to sort of like poke around if you're on a wild card or you're looking for differentials with low ownership players. I mean, not to say nothing of their defense. I mean, I remember when Ian Stimson was guesting on our podcast a couple months ago, and I was giving him the hardest time about having Craig Cathcart in his team. And now Cathcart's got 3 clean sheets in the last – well, he's got 4 clean sheets in the last 7, so that's really not bad. And Nigel Pearson has really got that defense whipped into shape, which is great to see.
There was a question from FPL Prince said that there don't seem to be any standout goalkeeper options this season. If you're picking one now or in the next few weeks, who would you pick? And, you know, honestly, if I were wildcarding right now, I think I would go with Ben Foster as my keeper. Yeah. A little expensive at 4.9 million, but it's what, 3 clean sheets in the last 5, pretty good run of fixtures the rest of the season, not a really bad end, right? But I think there's a good chance. Well, I guess this is argument, if you're wildcarding early, who would you bring in? But I guess if you were wildcarding later, then I would, but you just needed to make a goalkeeper change now. Like, let's say like you have Fabianski or something like that, who just got, you know, just went down. I would definitely look at Ben Foster as my keeper. And maybe you make like a very late swap out, like in game week 37 or 38 for somebody else. But I mean, do any other goalkeeper options even stand out to you? Is there anybody that you think is really head and shoulders, you know, above the rest?
After fielding a zillion goalkeeper questions this season, I think I've finally come out with the thought that I just don't care. I cannot think about goalkeepers anymore. It's like
just give me 3 points from
Matt
Ryan.
Not
right?
Worth the pain.
Yeah, exactly.
Just stick with whoever you have and be free.
I'm
with you on the Ben Foster wildcard shout. I think that I'd do the same.
All right, Brandon, let's take a quick break. We'll get back. We have a couple lightning round questions, and then we'll look at game week 23.
All right, Josh, I've got a question for you. Have you ever seen an untucked button-down shirt? Have you seen it, like, in the office, on the street, at a wedding?
Oh, sure. Nothing like the late night with the like the tuxedo, the bad Men's Warehouse tuxedo, you know, where it's all wrinkled and hangs down to the knee. And yeah, it's a bad look.
Yeah, the question does plague us. Like, why do untucked button downs look so bad? It's just because they weren't meant to be worn that way. Maybe you think you're going to be more comfortable if you untuck that button down shirt. You're going to feel less like stuffy, but you're going to look kind of like an idiot. Thankfully, there is Untuck It, the original button-down shirt that is actually designed to be worn untucked. With more than 50-plus fit combinations, Untuck It shirts look great on tall, short, slim, and athletic guys of all ages. Josh, you and I got Untuck It shirts, and we have like kind of average guy sports fan body types, and these shirts, they fit me well. I think you're pretty happy
with
that.
Yeah, I know. I wore mine on Friday, even though I got up in the morning, I took a shower, and then realized that I was too sick to go to work. Even then, I kept my Untuck It shirt on all day while I was lying in bed moaning in pain. So that tells you, that's a true story, by the way, that tells you how comfortable these shirts truly are.
Absolutely. In sickness and in health. You can find your favorite Untuck It style online or check out one of their 80 brick and mortar stores. Choose from styles like wrinkle-free button-down, super soft flannels, outerwear, and more. So whether you're shopping for the perfect present or you're just trying to craft a smart, relaxed style of your own, Untuck It. It's the way to go. Visit untuckit.com and use the code BLUE for 20% off at checkout. That's UNTUCKIT.com, untuckit.com, and use that promo code BLUE for 20% off.
All right, Brian, we're back. It's lightning round time. Two questions this time around. I want Adama's body says, I don't know why, but the red arrow seemed to be more of a downer for me than the joy from an equivalent green arrow. Is it the same for you, or am I approaching the game in the wrong and unhealthy way? I'll tell you why I'm laughing in a second here, Brandon. P.S. today was arms day at the gym, slowly but surely getting towards Adama's body. I want a weekly update on how this is going for my Juan Adama's body.
I want pictures. Isn't every day arms day for Adama? But
Adama Traore saying that he never works out is such a lie. There is no way that guy never works out. That's insane.
It's that montage scene in Rocky IV where you've got the Russian guy who's getting pumped full of steroids and he's on the treadmill with all the scientists.
Yes.
And then Rocky is in a barn, like lifting logs up over his head,
pulling a car.
So I feel like Adama is like the Rocky style where he's like, well, it's not working out if it's just things that I find lying around the barn and lifting them over my head.
I guess that's true. Yeah. If you're just like swinging tires or whatever, then I guess that is a little different. Are the red arrows more of a downer than the joy of a green? I mean, they certainly are for me, Brandon. I think I can answer for you when I say that they are for you as well.
The reason why I think is pretty simple. It's that we're very competitive people and like the green is good, but the green you just generates a hunger in you for more green. And the red just generates rage and self-reflection and bad feelings all around. So it is just a product of you being competitive. And I think that doesn't have to be a bad thing. Like being competitive can be fun and can be rewarding. It can certainly go too far and it can become unhealthy and it can become unfun. And then if it starts rippling through other parts of your life, then that's bad.
Yeah.
But I think that's why, right? Do you agree?
Yeah, I do. I think a big green is like the best. Obviously, we're not playing an actual sport. We're just playing a game. But when you have like a really big green arrow, like in game week 21, when I moved it to 30K, it's like the way you will watch 500 hours of highlights over the next week. You will listen to 18 podcasts. You will talk to anybody about anything involving fantasy on Twitter or wherever. Like you become so into it. It is so awesome. And I guess a normal green arrow doesn't do much for me, but a really big one is worth like three red arrows, you know? So I don't know if we're getting too much into the theoretical here, but yeah.
No, well, one thing I do when I have a particularly big green arrow is I just pour over all of my mini leagues and mm-hmm. just look and see how my rank has changed there. And you're going through like one by one through like all 20 mini leagues and just just like gaming them all out. And you're like, well, I've got them. They're dead to rights. And then, of course, yeah. you get a red arrow the next week, and it's
you just don't even check the standings for a week. I will add that even though it's hopeless for me, the older I get, the more respect I have for the fair weather fan, like the person who just doesn't really care, because I have gotten this way a little bit more about other sports. Like the NBA for me is just a sport that I just enjoy, and I can dip in or out of it, you know, and it doesn't like the highs are not as high because I'm not as into it, but it's kind of. I'm sort of okay with that, you know? So I feel like if you're the kind of person who's asking a fantasy podcast questions, like for us to read off on the podcast, it's probably hopeless for you, right? You're doomed, but I do respect the person who can just check out and not care at all. But I think that, obviously you don't want to go crazy. You have to, I think that the biggest thing is to, not watch every single match. I think that sometimes when I'm having a really bad game week, one of the things that I'll get mad at myself about is I'll think, well, I just spent the entire weekend watching all these matches, you know, like what a waste, mm-hmm. you know? And so I've been trying to cut back on the number of hours I spend watching matches over the weekend, and that sort of makes it a little bit better, you know. Like if you have a bad game week but you didn't watch the entire like the matches that really hurt you, then there is a kind of like distance there, you know. Like I know a lot of people do the match of the day challenge where they just don't watch any Premier League all day and they'll wait until 7 o'clock at night or I guess match of the day comes on much later in the UK, whatever, you know, whenever it comes on, and just do it then. And that does seem like a better way to do it in some ways. It's like you get all the misery kind of allotted in this like a little 2-hour window, you know? So that's something
I do want to push back on that a little bit in that I what really drives me crazy is how FPL cannot be separated from the football matches. And for you to think I've had a bad FPL week, therefore I wasted this time watching the Premier League.
Right. Like,
that drives me crazy because no, you watch the Premier League because you love the league. You love watching football. And
right.
that's exciting. And if FPL is driving you away from the game that brought you here in the first place,
right.
then that's a bigger problem.
Well, maybe it's about how you watch. Maybe it's about how you watch the matches then. You know, maybe you need to turn off the fantasy brain a little more. Because if I'm watching a match where I don't own any of the players and there are a bunch of highly owned players in that game and they're all doing super well, it is not easy for me to enjoy that on an aesthetic level. You know, I'm sort of just too mm-hmm. focused on how much it's crushing me, you know? So, so I don't know. That may be something that could just be a personal thing where it's just hard for me to turn off that fantasy brain. I always enjoy watching the matches, but you know how it is. Sometimes you're like, it's like a beautiful, you know, especially like when the matches start up again in August. And you're like, yep, it's like 85 yeah. and sunny. And I had a crap game week. And I just spent, you know, in the US, it's like I just spent 8 a.m. to noon, like with the blinds drawn, you know, watching TV. And then those are the times when I feel slightly guilty, you know. But in general, I don't feel guilty, but I love it. I mean, it's a blast.
I genuinely thrive in an environment in which I'm alone and it's dark inside. So
fair enough.
That's where I thrive. That's how I win.
Okay, here's the final thing. We talk about the Black Horse Pub a lot on here, but if I'm having a bad game week and I'm watching it with a lot of my friends at the bar, it is never bad. It is never a bad time because I'm still, you know, so I mean, maybe getting out to watch matches more is another answer, right? Mm-hmm. Because
it's a good
because if you're just having fun and you're laughing and you're drinking and whatever, that's almost never a bad time, right? So, yeah,
absolutely. Drink responsibly.
All right. Well, it's 30 second responses to these questions, so I think we're at like 28 seconds. Time to move on to the next one. And the final question, actually, for the lightning round, Secret FPL player says, where does the points chasing boundary, that's trademark pending, Brandon, exist on a scale of, for example, KDB, Rashford, Ings, Mahrez, Doucouré? Where is the line and how do we know where to draw it? So basically, when you bring in a player who's doing well, are you chasing points? Is there, you know, like, do you think about chasing points? Is this something that you?
I do.
I guess, you know, I mean, okay. Like, I mean, chasing points, like, it's a classic, like, worry. You know, I think that Ings is a player who fell into that category, and maybe we're now, like, a little more convinced. So, you know, how do you decide whether you're bringing in a player that you really like or a player that you might be chasing points on?
Well, yeah, it's kind of something I was saying about City earlier in the podcast and in terms of totality. So are you chasing points by bringing in a player because they scored in the previous game week and they have done nothing else prior to? Well, that's a textbook case of chasing points. You think you look at Ings, and Ings has had, I think, like, he's had a handful of blanks throughout the entire season. You're right. Not chasing points. There is a massive totality there. Mm-hmm. Mahrez he exists in some sort of middle ground. And that's where I think you really have to focus on, you have to really become an FPL manager in that case, where you have to watch Mahrez's recent performances and you have to scrutinize the stats. So, you know, you could go to a membership site like Fantasy Football Scout, or you could find other statistic sites with heat maps and touches and goal involvement that you can find for free to really analyze. Well, is Mahrez's recent form backed up by any numbers that you could say would continue?
Right.
And that's the hard labor of deciding that you're not points chasing.
Yeah, I think that's where it helps to have like a non-fantasy brain too when you think about this stuff, because you can usually put the player into context a little bit. Like, I was thinking about someone like Callum Robinson, right? For Sheffield United, he was a player who had 11 points in game week 4 away to Chelsea, right? Goal and assist. He was a player they signed in the summer. Talented player, but kind of unproven, right? So if you brought him in after game week 4, that to me is kind of a case of chasing points, because no track record, on a team that isn't a real, like, and on a team that doesn't have a track record either, right? I mean, so, you know, if a player does well on a team like Bournemouth traditionally, well, Bournemouth are a pretty attacking team. There might be like someone worth, like a David Brooks kind of player. Like maybe you could think about them a little bit more. It's not like they were signed for like a massive deal, or like they're some young and upcoming player. They don't have like a season in the past where they've done extraordinarily well. Even someone like Danny Ings, who has been, you know, frequently injured, did have a season several years ago where he had double digit goals, right? So it's not like he's never even, you know, he even has a double digit goal season in his history. So it makes him even more kind of reliable, I think, as a player, or as a player to consider. So it's when they truly have, like, it's when they have no history at all, and the team that they're on has no history either of kind of developing or promoting players into fantasy assets. I think that's when you might be chasing points. And I think with Man City, it's kind of almost a whole other category, because with them, the question is, how do they fit into that team? And this to me is where the Mahrez question feels still unanswered, because I don't understand where he fits into that team necessarily. Is he just in the hole like indefinitely now, or every other match, or is he going to play in the right sometimes, I suppose, in place of Bernardo Silva? It feels very confusing to me, you know, how he slots into them. And so that kind of ambiguity makes me feel like I don't know if I'm chasing points, but I'm sort of, it feels too unreliable to me, you know? And so that's, I guess mm-hmm. that, you know, that, so it does feel like chasing points a little bit, because I feel like I wouldn't be like getting consistent returns. And I feel like that's a factor as well. So, I don't know if any of that made any sense, but that's my thing.
No, it did make sense. I guess the last thing I would say too is, I think, one of the problems that comes from chasing points is not who you're bringing in, but who you're getting rid of. Like, you look at a player like Jimenez, who, you know, he's been disappointing the last 2 or 3 weeks. Do you immediately chop him and chase points from another player when you know full well that Jimenez has more goals to come? Like it's sort of like you're talking about, how does Mahrez fit into the IRL City team? How does the FPL asset you're bringing in fit into your own squad? Who are you getting rid of to bring them in? And what's the expectation there?
Yeah. And it's funny, by the way, that I big up Madison earlier on this podcast, because I think doesn't Madison have like five blanks in his last six or something like that? But I still trust him more for some reason. I don't know. It feels like he should have more attacking returns than he does, doesn't it? Like, I can't believe he has five blanks and six. It seems surprising to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I said this, I think, last week when we were doing our report card, where Madison just exists on a knife's edge, in that it's all or nothing with him as an FPL asset. So I think that's the risk you take.
All right, Brett, we'll move on from the perpetually on the knife's edge James Madison. Much like James Madison's presidency, Brandon, a lot of drama in that presidency, but that's it's a story for another podcast. Game week 23 kicks off on Saturday. I was looking ahead to game week 23, and I'm kind of excited about what a classic like fixture structure it is. Right, there is 8 matches on Saturday, 2 on Sunday. Both the Sunday matches are good fantasy matches. Lots to like about those two. The Saturday matches are kind of all over the place. Some interesting ones in there. I mean, the rejuvenated Watford hosts Spurs in the early match on Saturday. I think Arsenal, as a fan of the Premier League brand, which as you've noted early in this podcast, we should always strive to be. Yeah. I mean, Watford Spurs should be interesting. Arsenal Sheffield United, I think, could be a really interesting match, especially without Aubameyang. Man City Palace, but it'll be coming off them playing the second leg of the Carabao Cup. Lots that's intriguing. And unfortunately, the primetime match on Saturday, Newcastle Chelsea, is probably the one I'm least excited about on the day. But yeah, especially with Pulisic out.
Jumps out to me is the how even these fixtures seem to be, like Brighton Villa. Great matchup. Yeah. Norwich, Bournemouth, just classic six-pointer. Mm-hmm. Southampton, Wolves, they couldn't be more evenly matched at this point in the season with their form. Yep. West Ham, Everton, same deal. It's going to be an interesting Saturday. So I guess we should talk a little bit about captaincy. So you have your bus team captaincy on Kevin De Bruyne. Mm-hmm. I'm still not satisfied until I get my thumb-sucking celebration from Jamie Vardy. Right now, the bus captaincy is on Jamie Vardy away Burnley.
Okay. It's not bad. Yeah. I don't hate it.
I don't think we can talk about, I wish it were a home fixture for Jamie Vardy this weekend, because it's not like Leicester looked great at home against Southampton in game week 22. My issue with the Kevin De Bruyne shout-out is Crystal Palace have tended to be a bit of a bogey team for Manchester City, just going back to last season too. Earlier this season, it was a 2-0 victory for City, and De Bruyne didn't pick up any attacking returns. So, what do I read into that? You seem pretty happy with that captaincy on KDB, though.
It's a contingent captaincy. If he plays the full 90 in the second leg of the Carabao Cup, maybe it gets moved off him. I actually think Sadio Mane at home to Man United is a really tempting captaincy there too. I don't really know that I can see Man United stopping him from doing something in that match. And I just don't see that as like a 1-0. Like, I think, I don't know, especially with them having played, they'll be playing in midweek as well. It'd be interesting. I guess a lot is contingent on what happens in the second leg of the Carabao Cup. I mean, Vardy will play in that one as well. So, if Man United rest all of their players and just kind of give up on that match, then maybe it's a little more competitive on Sunday. I don't know. But Liverpool are off now. Them losing that Carabao Cup quarterfinal is like the best thing that could have happened to them, right? It's like it just give them so much extra time to rest.
All right, let's talk about Manchester United fullbacks then. Mm-hmm. So Mane going down the left is going to come up against Erwan Bisaka. And Mohamed Salah going down the right is going to come up against Brandon Williams.
Probably.
Yeah. So
it would favor Mo, wouldn't it?
It does favor Mo a little bit. I mean, you know, Liverpool have been experimenting a lot with swapping wings, especially with Trent and Rabo, which has been interesting. So I don't know what they'll do to work around the tackling machine that is Aaron Wan-Bissaka. I mean, the swiftest route to goal with this Manchester United defense is straight through the fat middle.
Even with the forwards, it's pretty fluid, right? I mean, Mo Salah has been playing as a forward with Mane and Firmino in support at times too. I mean, you never really see Mane on the right. But Bissaka is going to be busy just dealing with Rabo, you know, on the left there. So, I mean, I don't think,
on the left.
So, I don't think, I don't know. So I don't know how much stock I put into those individual matchups. But I don't know. Just, it feels like they've been kind of picked apart by teams this season. And I don't know that I really trust Bayonetta to come into this match with like a great game plan. And even if they wanted to set up strong defensively, I'm not sure they could do it. You know, like if they could actually like get away with it. I feel pretty
good. I'm definitely talking myself into a solid captaincy right now. I'm making that change on my bus team right now.
You know what? I changed to Mane captain too as we were talking. Wow. How do you like that? It's a real matchup. Sorry. Fun.
Oh, I wasn't able to change it. Apparently the game is reloading at the moment.
Okay. Well, it's a fortune favors me then, because I already locked it in, Brody.
No!
So I think there are, but obviously I think De Bruyne is a great captain pick. If you held on to, if you brought in Aguero, I think he is the obvious captain pick, especially if he doesn't play at midweek. Danny Ings, good shout. I feel like I'm still in a position where just having him is enough. You know, I don't feel like I suddenly have to start captaining him. Only one double digit return all season. It's not like that team is super explosive either. So, I mean, it feels like he's getting one or two good chances and he's converting on a number of them. But it's not like, outside of the Leicester match, it doesn't feel like, you know, having watched him pretty closely the last three matches, you know, he's converting well, but it's not like that team is like super explosive. And he's just like, it's not like he's like Mo Salah up there with just like eight chances a game, you know, that he's like, you know, getting dispossessed on or whatever.
God, what else to talk about here?
Nothing. That's fine. Transfers. what are you thinking transfer wise right now?
So I like my bus team fine, and it allows me no benching headaches because I've just slotted Rashford on the bench. I just don't like the looks of, he's got this weird knock, which there's no news on at this point. I suspect he'll be fine, and whatever happened to have him come off the pitch was precautionary. Who knows? I don't know. But sticking him on my bench allows me to play both Cantwell and Grealish. No headaches there. But I think what I was talking about earlier in the podcast of doing Rashford to Ings and then playing Ings and Vardy and Jimenez up front, that does sound pretty fun. So the transfer is either going to be Rashford to Ings or Rico to Brandon Williams for bench fodder for this week. That's the plan.
Yeah, for me, I'm sort of debating whether I just want to start Lundstrom. And if I decide that I'm just okay with starting Lundstrom away to Arsenal, which I'm sort of think I'm fine with, I think I'm just going to do that. Then I think what I'm going to do is make my Firmino move in game week 23. And so I would move Jimenez to Firmino, and I would move Aurier to Brandon Williams. And Brandon Williams, full on punt, but even if I'm not starting him very often, I like him as a kind of game week 24. Like, I don't know. I just think that he's like a decent occasional player, you know, and if not, I just have him buried on my bench, and I'm fine with that as well. Ryan Fredericks has been buried there forever, and it's worked out fine for me so far. So, And then in game week 24, I would move Fredericks to somebody. That would be the plan. Although if Brandon Williams has that spot locked down, then I would probably just start him in that match, and because they play home to Burnley. And in that case, I would, you know, consider maybe possibly bringing in a West Ham player. I don't really know who I would want, though. I mean, is there anybody, have you thought about any West Ham players? Is there anyone you'd think about for this double game week? I mean, I guess if Snodgrass was a consistent starter, I'd consider him, but nobody else really.
No, their fixtures are just so awful. Yeah. Hosting Liverpool and then at Leicester. Yeah, Snodgrass looked pretty good over the weekend. But that was like amongst a bunch of other bad players. Their defense looks...
Felipe Anderson can't shoot. Zabaleta
starting.
Mm-hmm.
The goalkeeper situation continues to be a mess.
Yeah.
No. I'm not interested.
Neither am I. It doesn't seem worth it. You'd bring someone in and then you just want to drop them right away, right? You just wouldn't, you know, right.
And the Brandon Williams shout too, I think just plays into that points chasing conversation we were just having, in that while it feels like points chasing, just given the 10-point haul that Brandon Williams has, like the utility that he has for your FPL side, even just sitting on the bench, like the price tag speaks more than the points do, I think, for Brandon Williams right now. So it doesn't feel like chasing at all.
Yeah, and he started over a healthy Luke Shaw. I mean, Luke Shaw did ultimately go off with an injury, but it was an injury he got as a backup during the warm-ups. And apparently Ashley Young is looking at moving on. I don't know if you've heard about this, that he may move to Italy.
Inter Milan, right?
Yeah, exactly. So in that case, it's basically just a straight battle between Williams and Shaw. And if Williams was already
between Shaw and like the looper version of himself.
Yeah, exactly. Like the one who didn't, you know, I guess Shaw has had some really bad luck with injuries, but but I think that, you know, I mean, Williams, like, what does he have? Two assists already? Is it a goal and assist already? And just in very short.
Okay.
Yeah. Four, five starts in the season.
The run that Williams made to win that penalty on the Rashford pass. Have you seen Aaron Wan-Bissaka do anything remotely close to that
in
the last two seasons?
No.
It's very bizarre.
It felt like he was trying to be a little more attacking in the Norwich match, and it just isn't his game. And I was listening to some podcasts where they're talking about, like, is this just going to be a huge problem for Man United? You know, like, if this guy just can't – in the modern game, can you have a fullback who just doesn't attack enough, you know, and just – you know, one assist in the season, that was that pass to Rashford in the Newcastle match, but that was it. You know, he did have three last season for Crystal Palace, but I don't know. I mean, surely they'd want more from him. I mean, think about what Ashley Young has done and, you know, on and off over the last couple of seasons. I mean, he had six assists there just 2 years ago, you know, so I'm sure they need a little more, or would like to see a little more from Wan-Bissaka out of that spot.
Yeah, definitely. All right, that's a wrap.
That's the pod. I like how we really like walk the line between fantasy and real life, real Premier League talk in this week's episode. That's the pod. And we barely talked about VAR. So let's chalk that up as a minor miracle. Brandon, if you would like to support the podcast, you can go to patreon.com/alwayscheating. You can say thanks for what we do and get access to our Slack message board, an extra podcast each week, our private leagues, et cetera, et cetera. And to become a producer, you can visit that same page as well. Brandon, I know I did this for the Super League as well, but would you mind reading off our producer patrons, please?
Man, I get a kick out of it, Josh. I'm happy to. Great. So a big thanks to our producers, Trevor Ingerson, Mike DiPietro, Chris Howell, Andy Penn. Congratulations on the Titans, Chris Howell, by the way. Andy Penn, Chris Carter, Martin Savage, Brian T, the Big Gaffer, Bobas Kuhn, Jeff Husby, Ben Grant, James Holland, Jazz Binning, David Wegner, Laudahl. Sorry, Dave, I kind of got a mushy mouth on you there. Nick Wright, Jim Payne, Brian. This is not easy, Josh. This is not easy.
Nope.
Nick Wright, Jim Payne, Brian Chin, Blair Jacobson, Frederick Keen, Gransky, Travis West, Alan Creasy, Victor Forberg, Skogang, Paul Herzig, Kaya, Christine Lalang, Stian Niehaus, Barry McGuire, Peter Boduchtel, Andy Portlock, Toothless Gibbon, Andy Martin, Lindsay Rostell, Anton Markov, FPLmerch.com, and James Conroy. And if Patreon is not your bag, then something you can do to help us and say thanks is just to rate and review the Always Cheating podcast wherever you subscribe. Be it Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, Acast. That's very welcome. Also, give us a follow on social media at Hail Cheaters on Twitter, Instagram. We're also at Hail Cheaters. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/alwayscheating, or send us an email, hailcheaters@gmail.com. All this information and more, including the Always Cheating merch shop, is at alwayscheating.com.
Very well said, Brandon. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week.
Poku forever.